So I was actually just back in Connecticut at my high school for the first time in years recently and chatting with some of my successors about where I made my way in life and what I really didn't do actually in high school. In fact, I gave a talk about all of the studies that I didn't discover when I was back in high school because I still remember kind of wandering around the hallways when I was last there, looking in on various classrooms where I'd spent a lot of time, that there was one in particular that I spent no time in, and that was the computer science lab. I still vaguely remember kind of peeking through the glass of the window when some of my friends were taking their introductory computer science classes, but I had no interest in it, honestly. I just assumed it was all about programming and like C++ or Java, whatever those were. But it just didn't seem all that interesting to me. And anytime I did look in, all my friends had like their heads down, kind of typing away, doing whatever it was they were doing. And so I focused on like history and English, and constitutional law was my favorite class in high school. And so when I got to Harvard some years later, I kind of just stuck with where I was comfortable. I felt like, well, I hadn't studied CS in high school, so all the other students who are taking CS here surely have a leg up and know way more than me. So I figured out, I kind of thought of it too late. And there was this course, CS50, my first year here, and it had this alluring reputation. There were a lot of students in it, but it really didn't seem like it was for me. I wasn't really a computer person in that way, and I felt like I was behind. I didn't want to hurt my GPA by taking something so unfamiliar to me, and so I stayed within my comfort zone, and I took more history and government classes, and I sort of declared my major to be, or concentration, to be government. And it wasn't until sophomore year when I finally got up the nerve to shop, so to speak, sit in on a class before you officially register, this class called CS50, and I only got up the nerve to register for it officially because the professor at the time let me sign up for it pass fail. So no harm to the GPA, I was really able to explore really well beyond my comfort zone. And honestly, within weeks, I realized for the first time in like 18 years that homework can actually be fun. And if you find the field that's of interest to you, whether it's CS or anything else, by exploring things that you're not familiar with right now, you might have the same experience I did of going home on like a Friday night, the problem set or homework assignment had just been released at like 7 p.m. every Friday night, and I would spend the entire evening on my laptop working on CS50's programming assignments because I finally realized what it was. And programming itself is not the ends of a course like this. It really is just about problem solving. And so quickly did I realize, wow, I can use these kinds of ideas to go solve problems in other courses, to be more efficient, to be more creative. In my extracurriculars, I realized, wow, I could now build some application to now make processes more easily accessible on campus, like the intramural sports program was I able to overhaul just with a little bit of computer science. And if we kind of distill today what took me all too long to discover, problem solving really is kind of a picture like this, where you have some inputs and the goal is to achieve some outputs, and that in some sense really is computer science. And programming and a lot of the particulars that you learn in the classroom are really just deeper dives into this very simple idea. But how do you get to that point of actually solving problems? Well, I eventually realized that you needed to do two things. One, you needed to represent these inputs and these outputs. That is, we just all have to agree how to do it. And then you actually have to do something with those inputs to get those outputs, and therein lies the problem solving. And so how do you go about representing information? Well, I could represent information, all I need is some kind of input, right? And here's the power cord to my laptop. And honestly, even if you have no idea how your computer works, odds are you appreciate that this is pretty integral, having somehow electricity, some physical input come into the computer. And if you unplug it, it's off. If you plug it in, it's on. And batteries, of course, can persist this here too. But off and on maps really cleanly to what you all probably generally know to be true of computers, and that they only speak what language? Binary, bi meaning two, mapping to this concept of off and on, or as a computer scientist would say, zero or one, right? That's why we have zeros and ones at the end of the day, because the simplest thing to do electrically is to either turn the power on or turn the power off, one or zero. We could have called it A and B, but we call it one and zero. But if all you have in a computer is the ability to sort of turn it on or turn it off, or to store some value, kind of like a light switch goes on or off, how can you possibly do anything interesting or solve problems? Well, let's just consider like a simple light bulb here. Right? This has some power, it happens to have a battery, and if this thing is off, we'll just call it a zero, and if this thing is on, we'll call it a one. So now we have a single switch, or what's known in computing as a transistor. In fact, inside of your computer are lots and lots, millions of transistors that just turn things on and off. Well, if I have just one of these, I can only do zero or one. that's not all that interesting. That would seem to give us two problems total to solve. So how can we count higher than just 0 or 1? Well, I might take two of these or three of these and maybe start doing things a little more methodically. So I could do 1, 2, 3. So now I can clearly count as high as 3. But that would seem to be it as well. But no, computers are a little smarter than that. And we can actually adopt patterns of on and off, right? So this now I'll claim is 0. All three of these light bulbs are off. Let me turn on this one on, thereby representing what I'm going to call a 1. But you know what? Now I'm going to go ahead and claim that that's how a computer would store 2. It would turn a different light switch on, the second one. And you know what? If it turns the first one back on, this is how a computer stores a 3. And now just take a guess. If I do this, uncomfortably, what is the computer perhaps now storing? 4. This happens to be 6. This is now 7. Why? Like, how did I choose those particular patterns? Well, it turns out this is something that all of us are probably really familiar with. If you think about our sort of grade school understanding of numbers, if I draw something on the screen, quite simply, like this pattern of symbols, 1, 2, 3, this is, of course, 123. But why? Because all of us just pretty instantaneously did the mental arithmetic of this being the ones place, this is the tens place, this is the hundreds place. And then what did you probably do in that split second? Well, you did like 100 times 1 plus 10 times 2 plus 1 times 3, which of course gives you 100 plus 20 plus 3, or 123. Now, that's a bit of a circular argument because that's kind of where I started. But now these symbols, these curves on the screen, 1, 2, 3, actually have now meaning that we've all agreed represents the human number 123. So computers are actually fundamentally the same thing, and in some sense they're even simpler than us humans in the following way. If you have the same number of placeholders, and we write down with great difficulty, if we write down, say, 3 places, or 3 light bulbs, if you will, but doing it now textually, and I write down, for instance, 0, 0, 0, you can probably guess that in the world of computers, if you've got 3 switches that are all off, this represents the number 0. And if I turn one of these light bulbs on, so to speak, this, of course, as before, is going to be the number that I called 1. Well, if I now do not just change this one, but change this to a 0, and this is where maybe my light bulb patterns got a little non-obvious. Why is this 2? Well, it's the same mental arithmetic, but just with different places. A computer doesn't use powers of 10, so to speak, 10 to the 0, 10 to the 1, 10 to the 2, but powers of 2. So this is 2 to the 0, or the 1's place. This is 2 to the 1, or the 2's place. This is 2 to the 2, or the 4's place. And so you just need to turn these light bulbs on and off based on this kind of pattern to get whatever number it is you're interested in. So this is 2, because it's 4 times 0 plus 2 times 1 plus 1 times 0. Why is this 3 when I turned 2 light bulbs on earlier? The same reasoning. And what's the highest I can count with just 3 light bulbs or 3 zeros and 1s? 7, just because you got a 4 plus a 2 plus a 1 and so forth. And what would happen then if I wanted to count as high as 8, would you think? Yeah, you need to add another place, or really you need more physical hardware. And this is why your computer can only count so high or store so much information. You need an additional light switch or another transistor, if you will, to actually store additional information. So that then is binary. If you've just kind of known intuitively computers only speak zeros and ones, why? Well, that's because they start with electricity as their physical input. We humans have just all agreed to represent values in this way using binary by just having these patterns of zeros and ones. But that pretty much makes for a very expensive calculator if all you have are numbers. So how do you get from numbers and from electricity to now letters, say, of the alphabet? What could we do? How do we now enable spreadsheet programs and word processors and text messaging and email clients and the like? What can we all do if our only input is electricity or, in turn, zeros and ones? Say again? Yeah, we can just assign number values to letters. So you know what we could go ahead and do? And if we want to represent letters of the alphabet, as before, the only goal at hand is to just agree on how to represent that information. So let's pick a few letters of the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I. We could just say, you know what? Let's just agree to represent A as 1 and B as 2 and C as 3. Doesn't really matter so long as we all agree to do that. But it turns out some years ago, humans decided that A is actually going to be 65 and B is 66 and C is 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73. And so forth. This is known as ASCII or Unicode. It's just a system that humans agreed decades ago shall be used by computers to represent letters of the alphabet just by storing numbers. And those numbers in turn are just the result of the computer turning little switches known as transistors on and off in these certain patterns. And let me, with a wave of a hand, assure that we can represent colors and sounds and videos in very similar ways, but we need to actually just agree on how to do this. So in fact, there's an opportunity here perhaps to write a message in exactly the same way that a computer could. If you could humor me maybe with like 8 volunteers. Could we get some 8 volunteers up on stage? OK, 1, 2. Let me look a little harder. 3, 4. Can I go a little farther? I see no hands in the back. OK. There we go. 5, 6 over there. I see someone pointing at someone else. Come on, 7. And let's go 8 over here. Come on down. And I just need you to go ahead, if you could, and stand beneath these placeholders here on the slide, which I've gone ahead and rotated just so that they fit a little more visibly on the screen. Come on over. What's your name? Matt, come on over and stand under the 128. What's your name? Mira? David? David, nice to meet you. Hello? David, nice to meet you. Anisha, David, and Monica, nice to meet you. And what was your name? Shreyas, nice to meet you as well. So each of these guys is going to have to scooch a little closer to each other. And you know what? If this isn't too much effort, could we actually get 8 more volunteers? Now that you know what you're okay, now everyone's hand goes up. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, if you could. Come on down. We'll do this round more quickly. And what you'll notice now, that we have a byte's worth of volunteers here. What is a byte? A byte is just 8 bits. It's a more useful unit of measure than just a 0 or 1. And notice the terminology here, too, a bit. A 0 or 1 is a binary digit. There's the etymology of just that simple phrase. And a quick hello to AJ.
Ajay.
David, AJ.
Hi.
David, nice to meet you. 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 David, and nice to meet you as well. Here we have our second byte of humans. And what's that? We have a 7 right here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We have a bug. Here we go. Come on up. Thank you. Thank you very much. In computer science, that's an off by one error. What's your name? Helen, David, nice to meet you. Go ahead and join, I guess, this group right here in the middle, if you could. So these folks here, hopefully, do you have cell phones on you? Key detail I probably should have mentioned earlier. That's OK if you don't. That's right. That's OK. We're gonna recover. Whoever doesn't have a cell phone is now going to get a flashlight. OK. Let's do this. OK. Key detail. Sorry, you can go ahead and turn that off. I'm going to cross my fingers here that we have enough light bulbs. Hang on. Let's go ahead now and turn on, if you could, 3 light bulbs here. So do you have, you don't have your phone? Here is a nice iPhone XS. OK. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's go ahead and turn yours on. Can you share, swap phones for a moment? So we have 2 light bulbs there, and we don't need anyone else's phone on just yet. Could you turn your light bulb on? And could you turn your light bulb on? And we need just 1 light bulb here, if you could turn that on. So let me step out of the way, and you'll see that we have someone in the 64's place whose light is on in the 8's place, then again in the 64's place and the 8's place, and lastly, the 1. So if a computer indeed had some 16 switches or transistors inside of it and turned on those switches in this particular order, what message are these humans here representing at the moment? So it's indeed high. Why? Because the mapping we arbitrarily chose but globally decided on is that 72 is H and 73 is I. Well, let's try one more further. At the moment, we're just using 2 bytes of humans, if you will, 2 units of 8. But suppose that we didn't just draw an imaginary line in between them and count. 128,514. So if we could, a round of applause.